I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I just wanted to die right now. I think it's the only way I will find relief. I don't want to be this place that gave me... I'm so tired. I wish I could see you soon, even just for a moment, and hug you before I die.
A voice note from a Palestinian medical student in Gaza City to her mentor, Dr. Mimi Sayed. Dr. Sayed has just been denied re-entry for what would have been her third medical mission in Gaza. We'll go to Amman to speak with Dr. Sayed as Israel intensifies its military takeover of Gaza City. Then to the occupied West Bank, where the Israeli government's approved a settlement plan from far-right finance minister Bezalel Smotrich to permanently divide the West Bank and cut it off from East Jerusalem.
Whoever in the world is trying to recognize a Palestinian state today will receive our answer on the ground. Not with documents, nor with decisions or statements, but with facts. Facts of houses, facts of neighborhoods, roads, and of more and more Jewish families building lives.
And finally, President Trump has once again attacked the Smithsonian for focusing too much on, quote, how bad slavery was, unquote. We go back into the Democracy Now! Archive to a 2020 conversation with Lonnie Bunch, founding director of the National Museum of African American History and Culture, at the time he'd just been elevated to the position he holds today, secretary of the entire Smithsonian Institution and all 21 of its museums.
I think what I've made clear throughout my career is history is unvarnished. You've got to tell difficult truths. The one thing you can count on, we don't hide the truth at the Smithsonian.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's announced plans to call up 60,000 reservists as it escalates its operation to seize all of Gaza City and to forcibly remove the city's entire population. Al Jazeera reports Israel's carrying out systematic demolitions of Palestinian homes across Gaza City. On Wednesday, Israel killed at least 81 Palestinians, including five in an attack on a tent in the Shati camp in Gaza City. The attack killed three children, ages 4, 7, and 9, along with their parents. Israel's killed another 20 Palestinians since dawn today. At least two more Palestinians have starved to death, bringing the total to 271. Meanwhile, an Israeli newspaper has revealed the Israeli military has a population relocation unit to oversee the forced displacement of Palestinians in Gaza. Earlier today, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned Israel's escalation in Gaza City.
I must reiterate that it is vital to reach immediately a ceasefire in Gaza and the unconditional release of all hostages, and to avoid the massive deaths and destruction that a military operation against Gaza City would inevitably cause.
Israel's government's granted final approval to a settlement project in the occupied West Bank that would effectively split Palestinian territory in two, sabotaging efforts at creating a future Palestinian state. The E1 settlement would see the construction of about 3,400 new housing units and would sever one of the few remaining territorial links between major Palestinian cities like Ramallah in the northern West Bank and southern cities like Bethlehem. Approval of the E1 settlement quickly drew international outrage. The UN Secretary General condemned the plan as a, quote, existential threat to the two-state solution, unquote, while British Foreign Secretary David Lammy condemned it as a flagrant breach of international law. The U.S. State Department's fired its top press officer for Israeli-Palestinian affairs. The Washington Post reports the officer, Shahid Qureshi, was fired days after he recommended expressing condolences for journalists killed in Gaza and for opposing the forced displacement of Palestinians. In one case, Qureshi had drafted a press statement that read, quote, "We do not support forced displacement of Palestinians in Gaza," unquote. But State Department vetoed the language. The U.S. State Department sanctioned four more officials at the International Criminal Court. It's the latest move by the Trump administration to retaliate against the court for issuing an arrest warrant last year for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his former defense minister for crimes against humanity and war crimes in Gaza. On Wednesday, UN spokesperson Stephane Dujarric condemned the U.S. actions.
The decision imposes severe impediments on the functioning of the Office of the Prosecutor and respect for all the situations that are currently before the court. Judicial independence is a basic principle that must be respected. And these types of measures undermine the foundation of international justice.
Russia escalated its assault on Ukraine overnight, firing 574 drones and 40 ballistic and cruise missiles in one of its biggest aerial attacks of the year. At least one civilian was killed and 15 injured in the latest Russian attack. Russia also hit an American electronics manufacturer in western Ukraine near the Hungarian border. Meanwhile, the Kremlin has yet to commit to talks between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, despite calls for a summit by President Trump. Russia is also demanding to be part of any future security guarantees for Ukraine, a position strongly opposed by Kyiv and European leaders. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said, quote, "Seriously discussing issues of ensuring security without the Russian Federation is a utopia, a road to nowhere," he said. The Wall Street Journal reports President Trump has ordered the Pentagon to send three U.S. Navy warships to South America, including near the coast of Venezuela. This comes after Trump recently signed a secret directive authorizing the U.S. military to carry out attacks in Latin America to target drug cartels. On Tuesday, the Colombian president, Gustavo Petro, warned the U.S. against using military force in the region.
The Americans are wrong if they think that by invading Venezuela, they are solving their problems. They're putting Venezuela in the same situation as Syria, but they would drag Colombia into the same because these groups would take over underground resources and minerals. And this means more economy of death, not of life. So I told the United States through its envoys that invading Venezuela would be the worst mistake.
Texas's Republican-led House of Representatives have approved a new congressional district map designed to flip five Democratic-held U.S. House seats in the 2026 midterm elections. A bill redrawing the maps to favor Republicans passed along party lines Wednesday, advancing the legislation to Texas's Republican-controlled Senate, where its approval is all but guaranteed. This rare instance of mid-decade redistricting came at the behest of President Trump. Its passage was held up for weeks after more than 50 Democratic lawmakers fled Texas to deny Republicans quorum for a vote. They returned to Austin this week amidst threats by Republican leaders to have them arrested or removed from office and replaced. Houston Representative John Rosenthal said he and fellow Democrats will sue to block the gerrymandered map once it's signed into law by the Republican Governor Greg Abbott.
It's not just a power grab. It's the fact that because they're going to lose, they want to pick up more votes, but it's the way they're going about it, by dismantling black and brown districts. And let's face it, this is a racist power grab that especially goes after our African-American representatives in Congress.
A federal appeals court has cleared the way for the Trump administration to revoke temporary protected status for 60,000 people from Honduras, Nepal, and Nicaragua. Immigrant rights advocates warn the decision could lead to the deportation of families who've lived lawfully in the United States for decades. In other immigration news, New York lawmakers have condemned the Trump administration for deporting a six-year-old New York elementary school student. The girl and her mother were detained at an ICE check-in last week, then deported to Ecuador Tuesday. The girl's elementary school principal had urged ICE to halt the deportation, saying her, quote, unexpected removal will cause significant disruption to her learning and will likely have a deep emotional impact on her classmates and our entire school community, unquote. Meanwhile, in San Francisco, federal immigration agents tackled and zip-tied a protester outside San Francisco's ICE office on Wednesday. Officers also pepper-sprayed a number of people, including a journalist. In Washington, D.C., Vice President J.D. Vance, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, and Trump advisor Stephen Miller were repeatedly booed and heckled Wednesday as they visited National Guard troops stationed at Union Station. Some in the crowd chanted, "From D.C. to Palestine, occupation is a crime." This comes as the National Guard's expanding its presence in the nation's capital after six Republican governors deployed troops to support Trump's takeover of the D.C. police. President Trump's called on Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook to resign in his latest attack on the Fed's independence. Cook, who's the first black woman to ever serve as a Fed governor, has rejected Trump's call, saying she won't be bullied into stepping down. Trump has also repeatedly threatened to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell. Trump's threat against Cook came after a Trump official alleged she once committed mortgage fraud by claiming two properties to be her primary residence. Another federal judge has rejected the Justice Department's request to unseal grand jury testimony related to the Jeffrey Epstein sex trafficking case. Judge Richard Berman wrote, quote, "The government is the logical party to make comprehensive disclosure to the public of the Epstein files," unquote. St. Charles, Missouri has become the latest community to fight off plans to build a massive AI data center. The developer of the project withdrew the plans this week amidst growing community opposition to the secretive project. The community never even learned which company was behind the proposal. And police in Redmond, Washington, arrested 18 people at a protest encampment at Microsoft's headquarters Wednesday. The protest was organized by the group No Azure for Apartheid, which is made up of current and former Microsoft workers opposed to Microsoft's work with the Israeli military. Microsoft provides AI and cloud technology used by Israeli forces in Gaza. Microsoft has also helped Israel carry out mass surveillance of Palestinians. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's military says it's established a foothold on the outskirts of Gaza City and will call up an additional 60,000 reservists ahead of a full-scale invasion of Gaza's largest urban area. This follows days of escalating airstrikes and artillery fire that have killed scores of Palestinians in one of the world's most densely populated regions. On Wednesday, Israeli attacks killed at least 81 Palestinians, including five killed in a strike on a tent in Gaza City's Shati camp. The attack killed three children, 4, 7, and 9, along with their parents. Israel has killed another 20 Palestinians since dawn today. At least three more Palestinians have starved to death, bringing the total to 271. Meanwhile, Israel stepped up its demolition of Palestinian homes around Gaza City after ordering the forced displacement of its nearly 1 million inhabitants. Well, our next guest is an emergency medicine physician who's been on two medical missions in Gaza, working in hospitals that were under Israeli siege. Dr. Mimi Sayed received news Wednesday that Israel had denied her reentry into Gaza just hours before she was scheduled to travel there for a third medical mission. Ahead of her planned trip, Dr. Sayed received a voice memo from a Palestinian medical student in Gaza City who she met on an earlier medical mission. The student asked to remain anonymous for safety.
It's been over a week since the famine began. And honestly, I haven't felt full even once. I'm constantly hungry, all the day, every day. I sleep every day with hunger. I can't take anymore. I mean, you know, I feel weak. I feel too weak to move. And I have to still continue my hospital training every single day without eating.
That's a Palestinian medical student in Gaza City. Dr. Mimi Syed joins us now from Amman, Jordan. In addition to her past work in Gaza, she's also an assistant clinical professor at the University of Washington and Washington State University, and a fellow of the American College of Emergency Physicians. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Dr. Syed. I want to ask more about this Palestinian student and play more of the voice memo she sent to her. Describe the situation to us and who she is, who you work with. I know you can't identify her because she is really concerned about security.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yes. This is someone that has become a very close friend. We worked very closely together when I was there during my first medical mission. We spent all of our time together and some of the worst mass casualty incidents at that time. And we've kept in touch since and talked daily. And this is a six-year medical student that has been interrupted in her training over and over again, has been displaced with her family continually, and is now being starved. And I just got word that, you know, now she has just gotten evacuation orders. She is in Gaza City and is told that she has to evacuate again. And, you know, one of the voice memos I had sent in earlier in the week, she is refusing to leave. She doesn't want to leave. Being displaced under being so exhausted and so starved, I can't even imagine that cruelty and how difficult it is.
So let's go back to that voice memo that she sent you, this Palestinian medical student in Gaza City, also from Tuesday.
Hello, my dear Mimi. Ever since I found out that you couldn't enter Gaza because of the occupation's refusal, I've been very sad. I had hoped that I will see you soon and start to feel better from my previous state of depression and sadness. But now, I no longer have any hope. Everything feels over. We don't even want you to come and help us. There are devils in every sense of the word. Mimi, I don't want anything from life except death. Because I truly believe I will find peace on it. I just want everyone to pray for me. I was really hoping to see you soon, but in Gaza, things never go the way we want. I wish there another chance to see you, my dear, hug you, but I know I won't make it. I know. I love you so much, and I'm really sorry. And another thing, the Israel have already started occupying Gaza. I'm so sad and I'm so tired. We're gonna displaced again. Oh my God. No longer have any hope. I just wanna die right now. Oh my God. You know that I love you so much, my dear. And it's such an honor to know you. Love you. Don't forget to pray for us. Thank you so much for everything.
Again, a Palestinian medical student in Gaza City. in a voice note to our guest, Dr. Mimi Syed, emergency medical physician, who had hoped to not only, of course, reunite with this Palestinian student, but to serve a third medical mission in Gaza. Can you tell us why you were denied, Dr. Mimi Syed?
You know, I wish I knew. None of us are ever given a reason for our denials. We simply get a message with our name in red saying denied and the organization that we were with. I'm traveling with another colleague of mine that's a doctor in France, and she was also denied. So two out of the three in our group were denied. And one of them is a nurse, and he is not allowed to go in by himself in the organization. So all three of us are not going to Gaza today. We were supposed to leave early this morning. And again, when we try to inquire about the reasons why we are getting denied, when we previously had clearance in the last two missions that I was in, we're not given any reason. There is it's either it's random. You know, it's always left to speculate why we are getting denied. Both my colleague and I that have been denied this time, we have been incredibly vocal about what we witnessed in Gaza and have spoken out against the Israeli policies. But there's really no rhyme or reason. And this continues to happen. In the last 3 months, there has been a significant increase in the number of denials for foreign physicians. And we are, again, never given a reason.
Well, really, you, in addition to providing medical services, have also become the eyes and ears for the Western community because Israel denies international journalists the ability to go into Gaza. So here you are describing with medical precision not only the condition of people, but for months have been describing the situation on the ground there. Can you talk about the aid you were trying to bring in?
Yeah, I mean, again, Amy, you know, this is not aid that's going to fix any of the problems in Gaza, right? This was not enough aid that that's going to solve the starvation. But it was a little bit of aid that I could have brought in for the babies, in, at least in the NICUs, the infants that are starving, that need baby formula. There hasn't been protein in the market. Even when I was there back in August, there was no protein in the market last year. So I was bringing a little bit of chicken and tuna for people there. But, you know, the point of all of this is I shouldn't have to smuggle, as a doctor, I shouldn't have to smuggle in baby formula. I shouldn't have to smuggle in protein. This is not something that should be weaponized. And to your point, I have to think, you know, one of the reasons why we keep getting denied is because the same reason why journalists get targeted and killed in Gaza, the same reason why foreign journalists are not allowed in Gaza. The same thing happened in March when there was a break in ceasefire by Israel. There was a large denial, a large group of physicians that were going in that were denied right before they had this incredible invasion like they're about to do right now in Gaza City. And that's, you know, one of the major reasons why we're not allowed to go in. This is, again, a systematic and deliberate destruction of the healthcare system. These healthcare workers have been working day in and day out, and most of them volunteering and now being starved for almost 2 years. So the little bit of relief that us foreign doctors can provide, that has also been revoked and taken away from them. And it's nothing but cruelty, and it's nothing but intentional.
You've called out the World Health Organization, the WHO, and the UN. The UN every almost day, Antonio Guterres criticizes what Israel is doing in Gaza. Yes, most recently we played his demand for a ceasefire. What do you want them to do? And then, of course, your own government. You come from Washington State, the United States government.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when we're getting refusals, there should be some pushback. There should be inquiry as to why we are getting refused. This is humanitarian aid being denied. I believe that is a war crime. That is a violation of human rights. And so I expect some pushback. I expect some questioning. And, you know, everyone is responsible for it. As far as my government goes, of course, we all know that the U.S. is the biggest supporter of this current genocide, as it's been termed by many organizations. And my, you know, my state, my own representative, which I am a constituent of, I may mention, Marilyn Strickland, has refused to meet me. I have requested multiple times to sit down with her, and she has refused to meet me. So I feel very shameful that this is my government contributing to all of this. And it can stop tomorrow. If the United States decides that it can stop, and it will stop, it can stop tomorrow.
Finally, we wanted to ask you about the State Department suspending all visitor visas from Gaza, including for children who need urgent medical care. Last week, we played our interview with Ms. Rachel, a well-known child educator, the Mr. Rogers of our time, and she was singing and dancing with a little three-year-old Palestinian girl from Gaza named Rahaf, who had lost both her legs and was wearing prosthetics. She had come in under this program that allows children to be treated, but that now has been paused.
Yeah, again, this is a smear campaign, right? And I've seen the tweets that have been coming out, and you know, all of this is based on racism and lies. I have nothing else that I can base it on. All of the things that I'm seeing, there is absolutely no basis to say that the people that are coming in have any ties to Hamas or anything of the sort. These are fabricated things. These are children. These are children with amputations that have medical needs, significant medical needs, that are being evacuated with their parents, with their mothers. I don't even know where to begin with that. How can you say that those children don't deserve the medical care? The disgusting things that have been coming out, for example, from Laura Loomer on X, they're based on hatred. They're based on racism and lies and stereotypes. And that's really what it is. And I think that people need to start seeing through that and not pushing forward this propaganda, because these are smear campaigns to prevent children from getting medical aid. And I think as the U.S., since we are supplying the bombs, the ammunition to cause these injuries, it behooves us to help these children.
Dr. Mimi Sayed, I want to thank you for being with us. Emergency medical physician denied entry on her third medical mission in Gaza. Previously served as a doctor in Gaza twice in 2024. Also an assistant clinical professor at University of Washington and Washington State University, fellow of the American College of Emergency Physicians, speaking to us today from Amman, Jordan. Coming up, we go to Ramallah, to the occupied West Bank, where the Israeli government has approved a settlement plan to permanently divide the West Bank, cut it off from East Jerusalem, killing the idea, the possibility of a Palestinian state. Back in 20 seconds.
Kele sagal jagata
by Sunny Singh in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to the West Bank. Israel's government's granted final approval to a settlement project that would effectively split the occupied West Bank in two, sabotaging efforts at creating a future Palestinian state. The E1 settlement would see the construction of about 3,400 new housing units, would sever one of the last remaining territorial links between major Palestinian cities like Ramallah in the northern West Bank and southern cities like Bethlehem. Israel's plans for the settlement quickly drew international outrage, the UN Secretary General condemning it as an existential threat to the two-state solution. Last week, the far-right Israeli politician, Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, celebrated the plan at a news conference.
We stand here in Maale Adumim and clearly announce the seal has broken. The E1 plan, Mevesaret Adumim, is hitting the road. For over two decades, we were told soon, it's coming, right after the elections. And today, we are finally fulfilling the promise and connecting Male Adumim to Jerusalem, our one and only capital. A strategic security and demographic connection that ensures our united capital for generations to come. Whoever in the world is trying to recognize a Palestinian state today will receive our answer on the ground, not with documents, nor with decisions or statements, but with facts. Facts of houses, facts of neighborhoods, roads, and of more and more Jewish families.